one day was calling out Narottam, Narottam. The devotees took that to be Krishna's name. But Lord Chaitanya explained that this great personality is taking birth. So, he and the other two, Shyamananda and Srinivasacharya, if I'm correct, did not get any direct association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They came to Vrindavan only after his disappearance, and very soon after Lord Chaitanya's leaving this world, many of his major associates also departed. Anyway, Narottam Das Thakur came to Vrindavan. He first took shelter. Well, actually, he was advised. Who told him to take initiation from Lokanath? Lord Chaitanya. In a dream? Okay, in a dream. Narottam. Oh, got the order of Chaitanya. No, excuse me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly to accept Lokanath Das as his guru. Lokanath was a classmate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one of the original associates of the Lord. But he was not in the mood to take any disciples. He didn't consider himself qualified to be a guru. So he refused. He intentionally treated Narottam rudely and refused to accept him as disciple. But Narottam Das stayed in his association despite being told to go away, and he started doing very menial personal service without letting Lokanath know that. He would go to where Lokanath did his elimination from his body out in the woods. And he would clean the place up and even decorate the path toward the river where Lokanath was going. And it was only after several months that Lokanath first realized somebody was doing something, and then finally he found out that it was Narottam who was doing this for him. He finally relented and agreed to give him initiation. Although the other Goswamis in Vrindavan were writing books in Sanskrit to present Krishna consciousness, of course, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengali. And other books had been written in Bengali. But Narottam Das specialized in Bengali songs, very simple language. Jiva Goswami, who became head of the Gaudiya group after Rupa and Sanatan's disappearance, directed the three of them, Narottam, Srinivas, and Shyamananda, to take the books of the Goswamis, which were only in original or handwritten copies. I think some of the books that were sent were actually the originals. Jiva Goswami sent them with this big trunk of books to Bengal to start the book distribution program. The whole story is there, how the books were stolen and recovered. Narottam Das Thakur is most famous for his Bengali songs. They're collected in two anthologies, Prarthana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika. So to honor his, I think four generations back, Param 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 Guru of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote his collection of songs, of prayers, that are collected in his, was it something Lahari? Stavavali Lahari is the collection, not put together into a book by Vishwanath himself, but by his disciple. We have 33 different prayers by Vishwanath Chakravarti. And the beginning of the book is the Gurvashtakam that we sing every morning, which is actually addressed to Lokanath Das. Lokanath, Lokair Jivona. Oh, I'm sorry, that's in Bengali, that's Narottam Das Thakur. Okay, anyway. No, Vishwanath wrote the generic Gurvashtaka. But he also, in that same anthology, one after another, are the ashtakas for his own guru. Who's this Chakravarti? Radhav Raman Chakravarti, and his guru's guru, and his guru's guru's guru, and I think four generations back, is Lokanath. There's an ashtakam for Lokanath Das Goswami. That means there's one for Narottam and then one for Lokanath. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, to honor his predecessor in the disciplic succession, wrote a commentary on the second book of Narottam Das, the Prerabhati Chandrika. The book is written in simple Bengali, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is in Sanskrit. Just to show great honor to the works of Narottam Das, which Vishwanath Chakravarti claimed are equal to the Vedas. So today we're especially honoring Narottam Das Thakur's disappearance day. Every day we sing the Guru Vandana that he wrote. And I will read the verse, which is 26. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shriyo Nivaso Yasyorak Panapatram Mukham Dusham Bahavo Lokapalanam Sananganam Padambujam Shriyo Nivaso Yasyorak Panapatram Mukham Drisham Bahavo Lokapalanam Sarangganam Padambujam. Shriyo Nivaso Yasyora Panapatram Mukham Dusham Bhavo Lokapalanam Panam Bujam. Shriyo Nivaso Yasyora Panapatram Mukham Drisham Bhavo Lokapalanam Sadanganam Mukham Bujam Yonivaso Yasyorak Panapatram Mukham Drisham Bhavo Lokapalanam Sarangbanam Padambujam. Shriya, of the goddess of fortune, Nivasaha, residential place, Yasya, one whose, Uraha, chest, Pana patram, the drinking pot. Mukham, face. Drisham, of eyes. Bahavaho. The arms. Lokapalanam. Of the administrative demigods. Sadanganam. Of the devotees who talk and sing of the essence or substance. Pada Ambujam, the lotus feet. Well, this verse is a good exercise for those who are learning the genitive, Shashti Vibhakti, the genitive case, possessive case. Each line is a separate clause, and each one has its own possessive. His chest is the Nivasa of Shri, the goddess of fortune. His mouth, or his face, is the Panapatra, the drinking cup of the eyes. And then the last three lines don't have a subject case noun. His arms are the blank of the protectors of the worlds. And his lotus feet are the blank of the those who, Prabhupada translates, well, I'll read the translation, but those who don't, who talk and sing of the essence or substance, the sarangas. So the most obvious thing would be to take Panapatra and extend it into the third and fourth lines. It's the drinking cup of the eyes, his chest, his face, and what the... protectors of the world drink well then, but drink with what? Are his arms? That doesn't make sense either, drinking arms, unless you use the eyes again. But yes? Yeah, I guess Nivasa, because only because Panapatra doesn't make sense. If it said the eyes of the Lokapalas, but it doesn't say eyes. So the Lokapalas, the resort of the Lokapalas are the arms, and the resort of the Sarangas are the feet. And then Prabhupada also does a curious thing with the word saranga, which you must take from the commentaries. Saranga, usually ga, is from the, understood to be from the word gum, to go, those who go to the essence. But ga can also be, ambiguously, can also be a shortened form of gai, to sing, like samaga, or those who, not who go to the Samaveda, but those who sing the Samaveda. So Prabhupada, following I don't know who, is taking saranga to mean those who sing about the essence. Talk and sing. Here's Prabhupada's translation in purport. The Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods. Well, that's where the demigods are, in his arms. And his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. Purport. There are different classes of human beings, all seeking different enjoyments from different objects. There are persons who are seeking after the favor of the goddess of fortune. And for them, the Vedic literature is given information that the Lord is always served with all reverence by thousands and thousands of goddesses of fortune at the Chintamani Dham, the transcendental abode of the Lord, where the trees are all desire trees and the buildings are made of touchstone. It probably gives a footnote here. Chintamani prakata sadma sukalpa vriksha laksharviteshu sudabir abipalayantam lokshmi sahasra shatasam brahma sevyamanam govindam adi purusham tamahang bhajami. Continuing, the Lord Govinda is engaged there in herding the Surabhi cows as his natural occupation. Jai Shri Nimai Nisa. These goddesses of fortune can be seen automatically if we are attracted by the bodily features of the Lord. The impersonalist cannot observe such goddesses of fortune because of their dry, speculative habit. And those who are artists, overtaken by the beautiful creation, should better see to the beautiful face of the Lord for complete satisfaction. The face of the Lord is the embodiment of beauty. What they call beautiful nature is but his smile, and what they call the sweet songs of the birds are but specimens of the whispering voice of the Lord. There are administrative demigods in charge of departmental service of cosmic management, and there are tiny administrative gods in the state service. They are always afraid of other competitors. But if they take shelter of the arms of the Lord can protect them always from the attacks of enemies. A faithful servant of the Lord, engaged in the service of administration, is the ideal executive head and can well protect the interest of the people in general. Other so-called administrators are symbols of anachronisms. Anybody not know what an anachronism is? Okay, almost everybody. Half of the devotees here. Chron means time. Anachronism is something that's in the wrong time. It's out of time. That means it's too old, it's too new, and people don't understand it. Or it's irrelevant because it's not in its right time. If I walked in here dressing like people dressed in the 17th century, I would be an anachronism. I wouldn't fit in. So anachronisms don't fit. Well, we're dressing like people dressed millions of years ago. But we're not anachronisms. Other so-called administrators are symbols of anachronisms, leading to the acute distress of the people who are governed by them. The administrators can remain safely under the protection of the arms of the Lord. The essence of everything is the Supreme Lord. He is called the Saram. What's the literal meaning of Sara? Literal meaning. Cream. It's the heavy part of milk, where all the fat is. And those who sing and talk about him are called the Sarangas, or the pure devotees. The pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus has a kind of honey, which is transcendentally relished by the devotees. They are like the bees, who are always after the honey. Srila Rupa Goswami, the great devotee Acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, has sung a song about this lotus honey, comparing himself to the bee. Oh my, Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly, therefore, give my bee mind a place. That's Rupaka. The mind is a bee. My dear Lord, please give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion. For the service of your lotus feet. But because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom. And therefore I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please, therefore, let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. The devotees are satisfied with being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord and have no ambition to see his all-beautiful face or aspire for the protection of the strong arms of the Lord. They are humble by nature, and the Lord is always leaning toward such humble devotees. So this is a very poetic expression, this verse. And Prabhupada is bringing in even more poetry, pointing out the poetry and citing more poetry in the commentary. Anybody know this verse about the... please. Yeah, but there's more than one verse. Oh, where's that from? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
This is the value of poetry, particularly here we're using metaphors. Krishna's not actually a bee. Or rather, Rupa Goswami is not a bee. He's not asking his disciples, bring me honey, I want to drink honey. He wasn't in the habit of drinking honey. But this is metaphorical. He's a figurative bee. And the honey is really the nectar at Krishna's lotus feet. Prabhupada emphasizes the devotees are satisfied with the nectar at the feet. They aren't so bold to go right to Krishna's face or even his arms. The goddess of fortune, she can be bolder. She has a personal relationship. She's married to Krishna. So she can go to the arms. I'm sorry, the chest. Because she's his married wife. She has that privilege. But sometimes, therefore, devotees are claimed to be greater than the goddess of fortune, that she doesn't get the favor that other devotees do, because she has that pride of being the wife. The gopis in Vrindavan are not married to Krishna. They're in a paramour relationship. That makes their love greater than the love of the queens in Dwarka and the goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha. Dermata Prabhu, it's too loud. Just have him close his door. And the demigods, they are tainted. In general, they're not perfectly pure devotees. They have material pride. The pride of the goddess of fortune is transcendental. And really, there's no inferiority of her service. She's not different than the gopis. She's their direct expansion. It's just a special mood, a special service to serve as the wife of Lord Narayan. This is a special service that his internal Shakti does for him. But the demigods are conditioned souls. In general, with exceptions, they're not pure devotees. They're suffering pride, and they're also suffering envy. You're envious of a person if you think that he can harm your position. If he's a threat to you, then you're envious. There's no need to be envious of somebody who's not better than you, who doesn't threaten to harm you in some way. There's no need to be envious. There's no motive to be envious of a person who can't do you any harm. The demigods think they have enemies. They have not only the demons, but they're envious of one another and envious of us little earthlings that we might graduate ourselves to their positions and take over, push them out. A king or anybody who can perform 100 Ashwamedhas can become Indra. And Indra gets envious if he sees someone having done 97, 98 Ashwamedhas. He tries to stop him from doing the last two, or at least the last one. That's envy. So they're always worrying about their enemies, that they will cause harm to them. At least they have the lotus arms of the Lord, of which they can take shelter. The Lord will come and beat their enemies with his arms. That's what they're hoping for. And Prabhupada gives a second interpretation in the translation that they, or I'm sorry, in the, yeah. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods. In the universal form of the Lord, that's where the demigods come from. Or the kshatriyas in general. From the Lord's arms. So in his Viratrupa, that is their resting place or their origin. And when that's where they come when they're created, and when the world is destroyed, that's where they go back to. That's their home. The demigods are the original kshatriyas. The kings on the earth are secondary kshatriyas, but the original kshatriyas are the demigods. Just like the original brahmanas are the great rishis who are born from Brahma and his children. These are the original brahmanas. And the brahmanas on the earth get their secondary wisdom from the rishis. So the kings on the earth get their power, which is what they're interested in, is power, not knowledge, but power. They get that power, the kings on the earth, from the demigods. If you get any English money, you'll see on it, I don't know how to pronounce the Latin, but Elizabeth II, Dei Grazie, by the grace of God, Queen of England. It's on all the coins, and I guess also bills also. Her picture, and the statement that she is the Queen of England by grace of God. So God and the demigods are giving their power to the rulers on the earth. It's derivative, secondary power. The kshatriyas are interested in power. It's of the prime value to them, because that's how they fulfill their ambitions and execute their duties, by getting a powerful position, by ruling, by conquering and ruling. They're actually serving the principles of Dharma by doing that, by conquering and ruling. They're protecting the Brahmins, the cows, and keeping everybody in their proper positions and protecting the whole society because they have that strength, because they have power of rule. And that way they protect, they help maintain the principles of religion. The Brahmins do it on a higher level, without violence, without having interest or resorting to power, force. The Brahmins, by their knowledge, and by the purity of their speech, by the honesty they have, their word is taken as more powerful than the weapons of the kshatriyas. Their word is trusted. And it has the strength of law, the word of the Brahmanas, because they have this wisdom, this knowledge. So the Brahmins are interested in knowledge, the Kshatriyas are interested in power. But both of them are doing it selflessly, fulfilling their, carrying out their ambitions for the selfless purpose of protecting human society and promoting the Vedic Dharma. So we have the Dharma Shastras and also the Artha Shastras. They overlap. They both discuss the laws for different classes of human society, for each of the varnas and ashrams, what they should do, what they should not do, how they should do it, what they do, and their privileges, their responsibilities and privileges are described in the Dharma Shastras. They're also described in the Artha Shastra. But there's a somewhat of a difference. very similar contents, same purpose, but one class of text is written for the Brahmanas, the other for the Kshatriyas. The Dharmashastras are written for the Brahmanas. The original Dharmashastras were in the form of sutras, directly connected with the Vedic texts. But Brahmanas also become less intelligent as time moves on, so the later Dharmashastras are written in verse form, easier to understand. Like the Manusmriti, which was written in the Dwarpa Yuga, is written in verse form. There's also a Manava Dharma Sutra. Manu also wrote the same laws in sutra form, like you're learning the Grammar Sutras, or you may someday study the Vedanta Sutra. So also the law books are written in sutra form, and then later recomposed in verse form, shloka form, by various rishis. And the audience for these Dharma Shastras are the Brahmanas, who are going to give advice to other people what to do and what not to do, and how to go about doing it. The Artha Shastra is similar. It has much of the same contents, but it's meant for the Kshatriyas. The Brahmins are interested. They must understand all the ramifications of Dharma. They need knowledge, thorough knowledge. Kshatriyas don't need all that knowledge. Their interest is more restricted. They want power. They want to know what to do, what not to do, so that they can get and maintain power. So the Arthashastras are written from a different angle and a different emphasis, especially the duties of kings and how the kings should help others understand and perform their duties. That's the Arthashastra. Anyway, these demigods, who are the original Kshatriyas, take shelter of Krishna's arms, or in other words, they reside there. And Sadanganam Padambujam. Last but not least are the pure devotees who may be Kshatriyas. They may be goddess of fortune. Goddesses of fortune are also devotees and sometimes pure devotees. Pure devotees also have eyes. They're also very happy to see Krishna's face, but they're in a special category. They're the sadangas. Those sadanga can also be a name of can be a term referring to bee, I think, because bees go for the honey or for the nectar in the flower that they make honey out of, the liquid nectar and the pollen. That is the essence of the flower, is that nectar that the bees are interested in. Bees are called sarangas, but also pure devotees are like those bees. They want only what is of absolute value in this world. Everything else they can put aside. Take all the inferior things, they just take as much as their body and their minds require. But what they're interested in, what they're greedy for, is the essence. So, Rupa Goswami, when he gets to the point in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to describe Raghunuga Bhakti, he, just like he described the qualification for devotional service in general, in the beginning of the book, later on when he defines Raghunuga Bhakti, he specifies what's the qualification. And that is greed. Is it loba? Loba is the term he uses. Elsewhere the term laulium is used, same thing. Avarice. Great greed. But it's not ordinary material greed. It's greed or great eagerness to have the essence, the sara, not for anything inessential. We are not ready for Raghunuga Bhakti until we develop that loba. Doesn't mean I'm greedy to stuff, just like in Radhakunda, there's a lot of money available nowadays. a lot of Westerners with money and immature people who live there, they may become interested in the money. And there was a few years ago, some Babaji died. And they found in his mattress, it was stuffed with dollar bills, with money, a lot of money. That's a different kind of loba, not the kind of loba that is supposed to be encouraged in Radhakund. But when we get the real loba, the greed for the essence, then we can enter Raghunuga Bhakti. We can actually think with concentration about Krishna, Radha Krishna and their pastimes. That is Saranga, one who is interested in the essence. And also Saranga, from the verb gai, to sing. If your interest, you can tell. You may not be able to tell superficially, but the scientific test of who's really surrendered to Krishna, who is really Saranga, is when he opens his mouth, what does he talk about? The devotee who talks about Krishna is serious. He's actually developing that greed, spiritual greed. But the devotee who has other topics to talk about that really don't need to be talked about, talking about them is a waste of time. In Russia, there's seven Russian language, there's several different words for speaking. You can say rasuzhdat, razgovarivat, or boltat. That means to gossip, to talk unnecessarily. Devotees who don't talk unnecessarily about mundane topics, they're serious and they're on the way to developing the greed that is the qualification for entering the higher levels of devotional service. So last but least are mentioned these sarangas in this verse. Very beautiful verse. This kind of devotion is manifested also in Dwarka. So we're not wasting our time. This is not gossip or mundane topic that we should disregard. The glories of Krishna, his entrance into Dwarka. We shouldn't be falsely proud of our so-called attachment to Vrajadham and disparage Krishna and his devotees in their loving exchanges in Mathura and Dwarka. One of our former students, Jambavan Prabhu, he went to see a big acharya here in Govardhan, or maybe in Mathura, just to see. He went, and the acharya asked him, "What's your name?" And he said, Jambavan. I said, "Jambavan, why are you named after a monkey? Why don't you have a proper name?" You know, not proper, that's not a proper attitude. We shouldn't disparage Lord Ramachandra and his devotees, thinking that we're better than that. Even if we had a real taste for the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, we wouldn't, in that case, look down on Krishna's vilas expansion as Lord Ramachandra. Krishna doesn't. Mother Yashoda, when Krishna's going to bed, she tells stories about Ramachandra sometimes, and Krishna's very delighted to hear them. So why are we turning up our noses at Krishna's pastimes and his expansion forms? So, therefore, even if we are trying to aim to something higher, we should be very happy to hear about Krishna's appearance in Dwarka and in Mathura. Okay, Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You were talking about how devotees are a very humble nation. They don't think they deserve anything higher than Krishna's feet. And I just wanted to ask you about if you could kind of elucidate on prayers of Prithu Maharaj in that context when he was praying to the Lord to neglect Lakshmi and take him, employ him as in place of Lakshmi. He said that you're self-sufficient, you can manage without her, so please take my side and engage
and
me.
He's positioning himself. He's positioning himself as a rival of Goddess Lakshmi. So this is transcendental pride, transcendental arrogance. It's not wrong because it's a bhava, it's an ecstasy. Coming from the heart that's feeling pure love. There's no real hatred there. There's no real envy. It's just an ecstasy. So we have to see it in that light. This is a spiritual, component of his rasa, that bhava of irshya, I think is one of the 33 vyabhichari bhavas. Envy. But it's not ordinary envy. It's not really envy. It's just part of the ecstasy of being in love with Krishna.
Service where we can safely give in to such feelings towards
yes.
other devotees.
When you're practicing bhava bhakti, then the bhavas start manifesting. And they collect together eventually into the rasas. All the parts are assembled and you experience rasa. At least when you're beyond Vaidhi Bhakti, that includes Raghunuga Vaidhi Bhakti. When you've graduated from ordinary Raghunuga Bhakti practice and you're actually experiencing the beginning of the ecstasy, then you may experience irsha or such bhavas. Before that, if you're experiencing any envy, it's material. There may be competition among devotees. That's acceptable. But actually, any bad feelings against devotees, unless you're on the stage of bhava bhakti or prema bhakti, you have to be very careful about having any bad feelings against any devotees. It's wrong. It's a contamination. Okay? Yes?
Demigods are the original Kshatriyas. I'm wondering, is it also Varnashram systems applicable in the heavenly planets also?
Well, in that sense, they don't have all the rules and regulations we have, but they have the basic principles. They don't have to follow a lot of rules. But they're within the system because they're, as the original Kshatriyas, they're teaching and empowering the kings on the earth. The Kshatriyas down here learn how to be Kshatriyas by following the examples of the demigods. And it's the demigods who are giving the power to the Kshatriyas. So they're the foundation of the system. So they're founders of the system. They're not elementary students. They're like the big professors of Varnashram. So they don't have to learn all the rules and study, the arithmetics and grammar of Varnashram. They already know it. They're the teachers.
We mentioned about Goswamis have written books in Sanskrit, and Narottam Das Thakur, others, they have written in Bengali, like Kaviraj Goswami also.
Yes, and others.
Is there, after that. Yeah. Is there any kind of reason why the Goswamis wrote only in Sanskrit? I don't know, they wrote in Bengali also, or some other Acharyas wrote in Bengali. Is there some reason, anything behind that?
Yes, it's really just addressing particular audiences and serving particular purposes. The original Goswamis, six Goswamis and a few others, who met Lord Chaitanya and were directly instructed and empowered by him, their mission was to establish the foundation of the modern Krishna consciousness movement. The foundation should be on the solid. So for a solid philosophical basis, you should write in Sanskrit. 500 years ago, there was a big enough audience for such Sanskrit books. There were enough people who could understand them. Brahmins, pundits. But the rest of the people who don't know Sanskrit have to be taken care of also. So after writing the primary foundational texts, other books were written that explain those books. The Sanskrit books are explained by the Bengali songs and books. Now, Krishnadas Kaviraj wrote his Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengali, but he packed a lot of Sanskrit into that book. A lot of Sanskrit quotations in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Therefore, the more simple Bengali audiences, for them, Chaitanya Bhagavat is more suitable. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he liked, whenever he had extra time, to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. But in his Gaudiya Math, as I heard, he instructed that there should be a Chaitanya Bhagavat class every morning. Because the common class of devotees could understand it easily. It's mostly Bengali. So it's according to the audience and a particular purpose at a particular time that one author wrote in Sanskrit and later on someone else wrote in Bengali.
Krishna, is there any reference for Narottama Das Thakur that he was asked by somebody to write these song books in Bengali? In the case of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he was asked, he himself he writes in the very beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita that he was asked.
You're asking me if Narottama Das Thakur received an order?
Yeah.
Did he?
Is there any references?
I don't know the history.
Or it was his own inspiration.
I don't know. Anybody know? Did you hear the question? Okay, looks like nobody here is sure about that. We can ask around and look and try to see. I didn't take the trouble to look at the biographical information we have about Narottam. I just talked off the top of my head. So maybe there's something in those files. Yes.
Taken Lord Chaitanya when he predicted his appearance, when he deposited his prema in the Padma River, the person will become a great acharya who will spread love of God through his songs, and his songs won't be different from Vedic hymns.
So that was the prediction and empowerment given by Lord Chaitanya before his birth. I don't know if it was reiterated by anybody else's specific instructions. I don't know. Maybe. But sometimes devotees receive such instructions face to face, and sometimes it comes in a dream or just in your heart. An advanced devotee can receive instructions from his guru in his heart, even when the guru is not physically present. And, you know, calm is down and it's not, and the internet isn't working. You can still receive instructions in your heart. Okay. If you're mature enough, you can receive instructions in your heart. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.